Hey, this is Scott Stimson with the San Carlos Computer Club coming at you with Bibiana.
Hi. Hello.
We're here recording the intro for the last Computer Club meeting, which I believe happened June 29, 2021, where we had a great meeting, a wonderful intellectual discourse. And now I'm sitting here as Bibi's checking the calendar, talking to her friends, and playing a video game.
I was never checking the calendar.
Really? You didn't want to prove me wrong? Too lazy. Too lazy to prove her old man wrong. I think what that translates into is complete confidence that I'm correct. What was that? No. Well, one of the things that Bibi and I are about to embark on is a trip to Alaska. Are you excited, Bibi?
Woo!
We'll be rolling out of here in the next week. Are you ready? You can't nod on the intro because nobody can hear you.
Insert nodding sound here.
There you go. And when we get to Alaska, have you been thinking about the things that you would like to do? I know you're looking forward to seeing your friend. You've had a week to think about it. You have another week to think about it. And we're going to be there for a month. What's the top thing you want to do in Alaska?
Live.
Live in the cold. What about your friend Alec?
No.
You're not interested in seeing her? Or him? Or...
I have no idea what he's doing. He hasn't texted me.
He hasn't texted you. Did you text him? No? Well, you should text him and let him know. Oh, here comes Emily. Hello, Emily. And welcome to the intro for the last meeting of the San Carlos Computer Club.
Yo. Hello.
Please, please, not so verbose. I may have to edit some of that out.
Oh my god, Emmy, you did not just say that. Emily, censor yourself a little. Oh my goodness, Emily, there's people listening to this.
And they say all that.
Oh my god.
Well, look who's awake now. So do you want to hear what's on my to-do list?
Sure.
Ice skating, trampoline park, David Buster's. Isn't there a David Buster's there? Didn't we do that before?
Yes,
the video game place?
Yeah.
Video. Yeah. And then there's TBA presentations. Have you texted Josie?
I don't know.
All right, I'm putting that on the before. Where's your to-do list? Anybody? Anybody? Before Alaska to-do lists? No?
Nope.
Coordinate watches?
I don't have a watch. And time is real.
Time is a construct. I want you to have that argument with the airport when we show up late and don't get on board. Well, lots of ridiculous banter from yours truly. I am Scott Stimson, your host of the San Carlos Computer Club.
I'm Bibiana Stimson.
Nibbling on the phone as I bring the microphone close to her.
I will bite it.
And who is this over here?
Hello, I am Emily Stimson. I am Moss.
Moss. This is the same person that was bracelets for $5.
Yes, yes. The favorite child.
Emily Stimson.
Favorite.
The favorite child.
Ha ha, you made it.
The five. The bracelets for $5. The Moss.
$5. $1.
$1.
$5. Ridiculous.
We're all here to say tech on.
Tech on.
What was that?
I said tech on.
Until next Tuesday.
Wonderful in the car.
That's good.
Oh, so where is it popping off easy then?
Here on my iPad.
On your iPad?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different nub than what you keep on your phone.
Yeah, because I got
a different...
So I have one on my phone, I have one on my iPad, and then I put one on my Nook, because that one's hard to charge too, so it's really nice.
You know, what I would do is I would swap your iPad and your phone and see if it follows the nub.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's easy to do.
If it follows the nub, then you know it's the nub that doesn't have much magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's the cable.
Right. I could do that.
Swap cables or swap nub?
Swap cables is easier.
Okay, yeah.
You see my picture? It looks different. It's a wide-angle lens. That's the camera from my computer that is suddenly working.
You look ghostly, though.
Yeah, it's not a good quality picture.
It's a horrible quality picture.
So I guess I can select my... I'm glad I have the external camera because it's so much better.
But yeah, I guess I can select.
I guess I can select... cameras.
Oh, I just heard something disconnect and reconnect.
That was me.
I hope that was
Okay, I was going to say, I hope that's not Paul, because he's lost one of his cameras all of a sudden.
I'm just testing, and it seems about the same. So maybe it's just user error.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But it is a good idea.
I love it. I have finally had my own failure. The kids have had a couple of different failures where nubs have broken. And they haven't told me directly, but I suspect it comes from dropping a phone from, like, a foot on the nub and cracking the nub.
Yeah, well, mine's metal. See it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and yours is also
iPhone?
Right, but a lightning connector. And so that's a much nicer connector than a micro USB. It's a long wafer with no parts in it to break.
Because they said it.
That's what mine looks like. I don't know if you can see that.
I do. Yours is taller.
Yeah. And so I think what's happened is they've inadvertently dropped their phone on the nub and cracked it. There's actually a little bit of space in between the nub and the frame. I've had no problems with my... Probably the only complaint I have is occasionally it pops out of the phone. It hangs onto the cable, but it really has to do with how I disconnect the cable. If I disconnect it at a 90-degree angle, it's not a problem. And if I disconnect it straight on, it pops it out. Which is a bug and a feature, because there are devices around here that I can't get the nub out without really working at it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is going to happen with this, because it was very hard to put it in.
Yeah. You want that. You want it to be pinched in there so it doesn't just accidentally come off. And so the complaints that my family have had is both the kids and Yuya have had times where the nub was coming out, but I just retaught them how to disconnect their phone. Mm-hmm. Yuya had one that it didn't matter. It just kept coming out, coming out, coming out. I switched the nub and there was no more problems. Again, I said the girls have cracked them. Bibi specifically, she's given up on them. She just does not trust them, because what'll happen is she will have cracked one of the nubs, and then it'll sort of charge, and that's what she doesn't trust, is a phone that's like 50% charged when it's supposed to be 100% charged.
Right, right.
And then I have had no failure. I got these at Christmas time. It has worked for me consistently, entirely, the entire time. Same nub, same cables, until my trip to Arizona. And I brought a long cable with me, and I plugged it in next to my bed because I like to read stuff on my phone when I'm going to sleep. And the next morning, I grabbed it and popped it off the cable. And the nub stayed, and so did the magnetic end from the cable.
Oh.
So the magnetic connector, like here, I've got one of these in front of me. Mine creates a blue LED light. I don't know if you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But so that metal ring with the light ripped off of the cable. And underneath it was a little circuit board that it was soldered to. Ooh, I'm hearing me through somebody's speakers. And that's my first failure. I'm like, oh, wow, that totally failed.
I just got mine this last week, and mine, the part that plugs in is like very flat, and it's got this little green light on it when it's plugged in, and that's the only thing.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's braided. This is braided, the cord.
That's good. I like it braided. I like it when it's you can feel whether they've got flexible wires in it or not, whether it's a strand wire or a solid core wire. And this one is actually pretty cool because it's got 365 degrees. It's got an elbow on it.
Yeah, I looked at that one.
Yeah. And I really think that's cool. But again, having that piece ripped right off of the little circuit board at the end of the cable was a surprise, because I can't use that cable for anything now.
Right.
And I mean, I could strip it and use it as a USB cable, but there's no way I can repair that.
Wow.
That nub. But that was the first cable failure. So I guess those are our frustrations, is sometimes the nubs pop out of the phones. Mm-hmm. Some are easier to pop out than others. The kids have inadvertently broken the nubs. They've just crumbled. And I think it's because they've dropped the phone on the nub itself or whacked the nub. And then my cable failure is the first cable failure we've had. But that's over a six-month period of using these constantly. So I think it's got a pretty good track record with us.
That is pretty good. So,
and I love being able to.
So I've got some extra nubs, but I don't have any extra cables, of course. You need... This came with, like... three sets of three nubs and only three cables, where really it would have been nice to buy one that had more cables with it.
I put a nub on these Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. My daughter has the same kind of thing. And we can just... What I love is just being able to drag it across the desk and have it pick up the cable.
Wow. Now, I haven't tried that.
Well, now, the style you got was a rectangle, so it probably won't be as smooth.
Probably not, no. And since mine's always laying someplace on the floor, you know, that's another issue, so. We'll see.
You know, I've had to use reading glasses for the last few years, and mm-hmm. even in that respect, I've enjoyed it because I haven't had to think about which direction I plug the cable, because I've got Android devices. I just drag it across the cable, and it hops up onto my device. Well, I've still got this music playing. Let me turn that off.
I don't hear it now.
I turned it off. I can hear it. You guys can't hear it. And actually, I have, I've got the stream running on YouTube right now. I'm the only one watching it. And what it's doing is just a slideshow of artwork, as well as playing that music we were just listening to. Actually, it's kind of weird. I've got music running on this other computer behind me, running a slideshow on YouTube. And then I'm monitoring it on my system in front of me, and it's the monitoring that we were listening to that was going through the group until I turned it off so you guys wouldn't echo. 5 minute countdown. I talked to Bill and Cheryl this morning, and they may not be joining us. They were driving the motorhome out to the beach.
Oh, nice.
Yes, that's pretty cool.
I see that it's still locked down to go to fly to drive to Canada, though, huh?
Yeah, I thought that they were going to open that up at the end of next month, I'm mixing up my borders. Yeah, read news that they're going to open it up at the end of next month.
I read the 21st, but that's been ongoing. You know, they've always done the 21st, and then the 21st, and then the 21st.
And then the 21st. Okay, so that's probably the extent of my knowledge as well, is that they just renewed.
They just locked down my mother-in-law's assisted living again because one of the workers has tested positive for the Delta variation.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So where
in Colorado?
That's in Colorado?
Yeah, she's here in Colorado Springs. But yeah.
Well, it's starting.
I know. So she's not going to understand again why nobody can come to her apartment, why we can't go and have dinner with her. You know, that's going to be difficult again.
I just got back from Arizona, and I can proclaim that nobody there even wants to hear about a Delta virus.
I know they don't. They don't hear either.
A friend of mine says it's all a hoax, so I'm not worried.
Paul, I had a guy, I'm glad we're offline right now. I had a guy I was doing some work for that was convinced it was a hoax and then proceeded to tell me the story of how he caught COVID and people around him died.
COVID.
Yeah. Whoa. I was just blown away. I'm like, wait a second. This is all, and you still don't think this is true? He's like, I don't think there's anything to worry about. I'm not messing around with any masks. They died, but they had extreme health problems. And what was it related to the virus? I don't know. It's just like, okay, dude, just let's social distance.
Well, you know, my philosophy about the mask is that it's probably not very effective in attenuating the disease, but it reminds people that there is an evil force out there. And so to keep your social distancing and respect that and wash your hands and things like that, the mask helps remind people.
I like your description of an evil force. I think we should call that the Darth Vader approach.
Well, there you is wear social distance. Distancing here in Colorado, let me tell you.
There's
no,
none?
No.
So in Arizona, it was up to the businesses.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there were places like Emily and I went to the aquarium there, and they had limited capacity. Everyone had to wear masks. No. Limited capacity. Everybody working there had to wear masks.
Right. That's how
it was encouraged that people wore masks. Morning, Chester. Chester has got his new background.
Yeah. How about that? And there's flying birds.
Oh, wow. Look at that. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
I see the leaves falling. The squirrel. There's a nice little squirrel there on the branch.
I hope people brought some topics. I actually haven't had much time to think about topics, just keeping myself occupied for the last week.
When did you get back?
We drove back, Sunday night. We got back Sunday night. So I've had a day, but all I've had that day for is catching up.
I see Omar posting that he seems to be having a great time up there.
Yeah, no, they look like they're in a great situation. He enjoys the job. The people there are really friendly. He's been adopted into their family. It's a family business. And everybody's really happy with having him there. Yeah, we spent some time with him and Kathy at their place. I don't know if you know, but they're staying at the Rainwater's place.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if he gave them the connection with that company.
That he's working with?
Yeah.
Well, actually came through a mutual friend that has a lot of years in San Carlos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But very cool. It kind of serendipitously came together for them.
I found a way to switch back to my external camera. That's better.
That is a much better quality camera than the one on your computer. You look like a force ghost from Star Wars when you use that other camera.
Well, it might have had a thumbprint on it or something.
Oh, that's true. Some goo. Oh, you know what? We are supposed to be streaming right now.
So does that suggest a bad connection that it only works once in a while?
Once in a while is hard to determine, but I would suspect that it's hardware. Bad connection. It could be the camera's failing, and it could be a cable. Is it an HP?
Of course.
Okay. Then there's a very good chance there's a cable that's going bad.
In the hinge or something like that.
Yeah. But I don't think the quality has anything to do with a bad connection. Whether it's available or not could be a bad connection. It could be a cable that's worn out.
I'm glad I spent $20 on this.
Hey, Jim, thanks for helping Cheryl move the meeting forward. I watched the whole thing yesterday and enjoyed all your participation. But you are muted now, so we can't hear you. Or are you muted?
No.
Yeah, you are muted.
There you go. Now I can talk. We're we're in a heat wave here.
Gosh, that's what Cheryl was saying about where they are.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hey, before we get any farther into it, let me just say I hit the stream button.
Yeah.
We should be online any second now. I thought we already were. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. We meet every Tuesday to talk about tech topics and the topics that we care about. And that's all that matters. I'm happy to have you all here with us. And we were just going to get a heat wave update from Jim. Oh, my gosh. And Bibiana has chosen to join us this morning.
Oh, well, that's good. It's hard to compete with that.
Did you bring your cable?
I couldn't find my cable.
Your sister's got one in her purse. We're going to need the cable. Okay.
So we're about less than 20 miles from a town called Port Alberni that's broken the Canadian all-time heat record 2 days in a row. So it's pretty amazing. And we up here, we don't have air conditioning. Only 40% of houses have air conditioning. So luckily, we at least have a motorhome that has air conditioning if we really need to. But we just solved it by going outside.
Oh, nice.
How many degrees are there in Port Alberni?
You've been to Port Alberni?
Yeah, I have. I took the ferry down to a fish camp near the opening of the Sound.
Oh, yeah. On the south side there?
Yeah.
On the south side. Yeah, Bamfield.
Well, no, it wasn't all the way to the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
It was just before the Sound opens up into...
Oh, yeah.
A big bay.
Good. Now, there's some really lovely fish camps in there. They're all tucked in, but they can go out to the big sea if they want to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It was on the north side with no road access.
Oh, yeah. So we've got a mountain range between us and them, and we're on the ocean here, so we do have some advantages in that regard anyway. We could always go and submerge ourselves if we had to over here. And yeah. I mean, there's a bit of a breeze today, none yesterday. So how's everybody else faring in this? It's not just here that it's hot.
Well, it was 70 degrees here yesterday.
How much?
70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were up 20, we were like more like 100 here. It was 42 something Celsius yesterday in Port Alberni. But this is supposed to be the last hot day, and then it gets cools down again.
Okay, now we're recording on this microphone. They still can't hear us because I need to switch
106.
It over.
Oh, well, at least it's not forever.
Last week, we were up to 120.
Whoa.
Yesterday was 111.
Oof. But, so you were standing.
If you're outside and not in the sun, it's not really all that uncomfortable.
Hey, can you guys hear us okay? We've just switched to a different microphone.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a drier. So our Humidex puts it up even higher because of the humidity.
Yeah, the humidity is what really makes it bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Boy, that's the truth. Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, excellent, excellent. With Bibiana joining us, I've switched on another camera and a different microphone.
And that's all black.
You're all black right now. You know what? You're all black, Jim. Wherever you're sitting, there's not enough light on
right.
you.
That's right. All we see is a silhouette. I'm completely backlit.
That's right. You look like Deep Throat.
Yeah, that's right. Whoa.
you look like you're testifying under secrecy.
That's it. That's it. That's it. Leaking something to the press.
That's right.
This is a nice spot. Like I'm what I can see is pretty nice, and I am in a cool place. What's, so better than being in the office.
It's really nice hearing the birds in the background there.
I hear birds.
No, well, blame your headphones. Hey, look, Mina's with us.
Hi, Mina.
Hey,
Mina. I think you must be muted. And like Paul.
Are you blurry? Am I blurry to you?
Yeah, you're very blurry.
Oh, very blurry.
Yeah. Very blurry.
Well, that's good. I didn't want the real thing to show. The imagination.
He's putting Vaseline on the camera lens.
I think that's what it looks like.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
You might have a sticky fingerprint on it. Hey, Sydney. Yeah, maybe.
Hey, Scott.
I saw you jump in earlier and then come back. I haven't had a chance to say hi.
Yeah. And the weather report in Anchor Point, it's all sunny and everything, but we still haven't hit 60 degrees.
Hey, you know, 16. one of my first topics, well, other than to say hi, everybody, welcome to San Carlos Computer Club. Maggie's here, too. Maggie just got in without asking for permission. I don't know how she does that.
The hat. It's the hat.
That's right. I also want to say, if you got a YouTube, go, what happened to my internet connection? Unstable, it says. Go to our channel, youtube.sancarlos, or what am I saying? youtube.sccclub.org, and you'll find our channel and hit the subscribe button. We're still trying to go up to 100. I got one more subscriber over the weekend. Yay, we're at 34. My daughter likes to laugh at me every time I say that. She hangs out with YouTubers that have thousands and thousands of views.
But how many does she?
You'll get there one day.
Thank you. My life goal. And one of my first topics of the day, since we've got Sid. Sid, are you able to go? Are you able to do it?
What? In fact, I'm sitting here.
Are you sitting there now? I'm going to pull up Sid's webcam where he's doing his work for the Department of Transportation. They've got a 24-hour live webcam out there to look over the project. And I was talking to Sid this morning. I'm like, hey, why don't you just go sit out there and we'll see if we can see you on the webcam.
So, man, you are cutting out bad.
Well, I'm sorry about that. I'm going to blame your webcam. It should be coming up right now. Here we go. Anchor River Bridge Replacement Live webcam. Why does it say 557 on it still? Sid, tell your boss it's not refreshing. Okay, I'll hit refresh and we'll see if it works. This is the project that Sid's overseeing
right now.
The last time I looked at it, it said 557, so maybe that's what I'm looking at is the last cached image in my web browser. Here we go, 907. Is that your truck?
No.
Oh, well, that would have been perfect.
That's one of the contractor's trucks. I'm parked in the same place. I'm parked behind the bridge and off in the trees.
Oh, well, come on out, man. Don't hide. Don't be shy.
Don't be shy. Well, it's only every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're looking right about where my truck went.
Okay.
Just pop out and wave.
So,
come out and give us a wave, Tio Sid.
This is something we started. Well, it only takes a picture every 5 minutes.
Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll wait.
The fun part is we're going to put them all together into one long montage.
How long has this project been going on? I'm going to scroll down these photos so other people can see what's going on. Look at that bridge.
So we started clearing in March when there was nothing but snow and ice out here. We've been through breakup and the river flooding. Oh, there's a great picture of the road part flooded last year.
What I'm looking at down here?
Yeah, the one with the water running over the road.
Yeah, look at that. Whoa.
So that's one of the things we're alleviating down here with this project.
That's to be avoided.
Yeah.
Well, it's the river. It does this every year. You'll get an ice jam on either side of the bridge, and all of a sudden the water will just blow out and just start running wherever. We're in kind of a flat little valley here.
Oh.
You can look at some of the aerial shots that are on there and see how the lay of the land is.
Oh, yeah, there you are.
But part of the project is the way we're setting the new bridge up, it'll open it up to where the ice will flow by a little better and make our catch point further down. It's still going to flood out the parking lot for the campground next to us. But
so are they going to continue to use the old bridge, or are they going to decommission that?
Well, once we get the new bridge up and where we can get traffic on it, probably this winter or in the spring, while the river's still frozen, we'll dismantle the bridge, take it down. All the metal will be sent down to Seattle to get resmelted. And everybody's arguing on who's going to steal all the wood off the deck of this bridge. It was originally built in 1943, and we've been downgrading it for the last 15, 20 years to the point where it's getting ready to fall apart.
Oh, yeah. Pedestrian traffic only.
Yeah, it might make a good walking
everybody
bridge.
Still runs 20-ton. Well, we're going to have the new bridge will be 2 12-foot lanes and then a 6-foot shoulder on each side, which will be open to pedestrians. And it'll be rated that we can run heavy traffic over it.
Oh, great. What is it, a county road?
No, this is a state road. This is the old highway. And when they upgraded it in the mid-70s, this part got left in place, and then it just connects at either point where the new highway goes by.
There you go. Hang a heritage sign on your bridge and save the money of tearing it down.
Oh, there you go.
We're putting up a kiosk in the campground here that'll have all the historic information for the old bridge.
There you go.
It's got to come down. It's unsafe.
Yeah. So the foundation.
We would have to add a couple rails to it to make it pedestrian safe.
Oh, right.
I was trying to explain to my kid brother where I was working earlier this year, and I can't figure out where you're at. And I took a picture of the bridge and texted it to him, and he goes, hey, didn't I push you off that?
There you go.
Yeah, that's the bridge.
starting to get a history of that bridge already.
Wow. It really gives you a good indicator of how much bigger the new bridge is going to be.
Well, this bridge is 15 feet across.
The original you're talking about.
The original bridge. And there is one crazy old lady out here that is convinced she can drive past anybody on the bridge.
So, there's a point of Alaskan trivia, if you're curious, Jim. We don't have counties. We have boroughs.
No? Boroughs?
Yeah.
Well, that almost sounds British.
That sounds like Arizona. There's plenty of boroughs in Arizona.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so Arizona has boroughs and counties? I didn't realize that.
Well, is Alaska closed this summer?
No, we're open. You just can't drive through Canada.
Yeah, Canada's not open this summer.
Matter of fact, our 200 foot of Canada that separates Haines from the rest of Alaska is still closed, and people are having problems getting to the ferry over there to get to work on in the peninsula in southeast Alaska.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's not good.
Got the Arizona burros are left over from the miners.
Oh, yeah?
Like I said, there's a lot of small furry creatures living in it.
There's a lot of nothing but nature in Alaska.
Yeah, that's... I've never been there.
Okay. Come on up. I know where there'll be a bed and breakfast for you.
Great.
All right, Sid, you got to report back. The camera's not updating.
We want to see you.
We want to see you. We can't get it. We can't get it to. I keep refreshing it, but it's still stuck on 907.
It's every 5 minutes.
Well, it's 912 somewhere.
You now understand the level of computer expertise that I deal with trying to get help from RIT. Scott, why do you think I call you and ask you all these stupid questions? Half the time, I'm working on state equipment trying to get it to work.
Well, they obviously need to get into one of my remotes. What am I trying to say?
remote assistance positions.
That's right. They should be calling me for one of my remote services. I'll give them a contract.
Well, last year, the guy I was working with in the office here in Anchor Point, he called our IT office in Anchorage because he was having problems with printer. It's a little HP office printer. It's nothing big. And the IT guy messed it up so bad, we just gave up on using it altogether.
Oh, I didn't.
I had to completely wipe everything on my computer, his computer, and
the... Sure, bring him in.
Okay, here I go.
Sorry, we just realized that we were neglecting the bird. Our bird gets up early and goes outside, and today we forgot to put him outside. Well, Sid, that's very cool. Thank you. I wish I could get this to update because we want to see you in your truck drinking coffee, looking like the man.
Here, I'll turn the camera on so you can see it. There you go.
There you go.
There's coffee. We're all good.
Well hydrated.
Well, yeah. Oh, hey, and for you Alaskan listeners, we're coming. Sid already knows this, but yep. Last night, Sid and Justin and I worked out the tickets. Me and the kids are coming up for a month. We'll be there July 14th through August 14th. And I will be trying to continue to run our meetings from Alaska on Tuesdays. But I may ask for an alternate to run a meeting, depending on what kind of condition everything's in when I get there.
Well, is the B&B open?
No, not this season. We just decided that we didn't want to risk it. We didn't want to bet our business on it. We wanted to stay as stable as possible, and that's functioning the way we are now.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But our plan is 2022, so tell your friends. If they're looking for accommodations at Anchorage Walkabout Town, we will be open again in 2022. We brought another club member.
He looked at me while we were going at night, like, where are we going?
Budge.
No.
Still on you.
I feel like a pirate. Arr.
Like, where am I? He's been here at least once.
So, have any of you folks brought any topics for today's meeting?
Well, I have a question.
Certainly, Chester.
Would you comment on Microsoft 11?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I'd be happy to. I actually added a topic that I haven't read all the way through, but I think it's going to be a good article. It's The Verge. I'm going to bring it up right now. Are there any specific questions right off the bat? Is there anything that you're concerned about? Anything you're curious about? I'll tell you, I don't know. But if I do know, I'll share that too.
Well, I've been reading up on it. So
yes,
if you have a Windows 7 computer that you've converted to 11.10?
Yeah, I want to hear about Microsoft Authenticator.
I'm sorry, Maggie, you're breaking up a bit there. You did the test to see your compatibility for Windows 11, Linda?
Yes. No.
Oh, you haven't?
I got a no.
You got a no. And actually, from what I've been reading, it sounds like most of us will be getting no's unless you bought a computer after the seventh generation Intel, and if my math is right, that means your computer has to be 4 years old or newer.
Well, mine was originally a 7.
Yeah.
So if you have a 7 and then they went to 8, okay, so I did the test and it won't take it.
Yeah. This article here, let me
So put, you need to do the test.
I'm going
to
put this in our chat.
Yeah, The Verge is a good article.
They have links to the hardware test. But you know, Linda, I suspect that's going to change. I think what they're trying to do right now is say this will be the most secure, the most stable, fastest operating system they've put out. And for them to guarantee that, they are putting a constraint on the processor and on your trusted platform module. And if you've never heard of the TPM before, what this is a piece of silicon that's dedicated to encrypting things. Apple has its own version and Intel's been making its own version and other manufacturers have their own solutions for it. But the TPM itself is a standard that they're built for. And so regardless of your manufacturer, it's going to need to support TPM 2.0 to be ready for Windows 11. And that, again, is a computer that was purchased no later than about 4 years ago. I think that kind of... Go ahead,
I think
Linda.
Another problem is your video card. I think another problem is your video card. Because a couple of these Windows 10 updates, I had a problem with my video card. And then it seemed like when they did the next update, it seems like it fixed it. But I've had a few other little problems on these updates of Windows 10. So I'm wondering if that has to do with it too. Some of the hardware is too old.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the constraints on it, I looked up the constraints because recently I've had a reason to go out and spec out computers for this business in Arizona. And so I figured a good benchmark would be, are they going to be able to run Windows 11 when it comes out? So I went and looked at the constraints are really low. The processor needs to be at least a dual core processor. It needs to at least run at 1.7 if I'm pulling this out of my memory, but I think that's correct. 1.7 gigahertz a second. You need at least 1 gigabyte of RAM. And there was no constraints on the video card. But then they've imposed these what feel very arbitrary constraints on it. Like, I know from experience, an 8th generation i7 isn't all that much more powerful than a 6th generation i7, except for in very specific areas that you typically don't attribute to making Windows 10 run better, if you follow what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And so with such a low bar on memory and such a low bar on cycles per second, as well as cores, then it's not very clear why they've put this constraint on it.
Well, I thought that other article I read said you needed at least 4 gigabytes of RAM.
That's not what I found from Microsoft stuff. I mean, that may be the intelligent recommendation. Like, don't even get into this without four gigabytes of RAM. I could totally see that. Like, I haven't explored Windows 11 yet. I know that a Windows 10 computer with less than 2 gigs of memory is just a toy. It's a single purpose app, and the problem is Windows is not a single purpose operating system, so you're always fighting for more memory regardless of whether you're only using it for one thing or not. So I think it's safe to say I would have at least 4 gigs of RAM, but I think Windows can run in 1 gig of RAM from what Microsoft said. Again, I think these are more they want to dictate the Windows experience. And so that's the reason they're putting these... Well, now I'm talking against myself, because that's really not what the layout, the system requirements were. I'm going to bring up the system requirements, because they read like they were the same as Windows 10. And this is actually the reason that I think that they're going to lift these. They're going to become much more flexible for older equipment, because they seem arbitrary. And if you're not concerned about the kind of... I'm sorry, I didn't mix it up. It is 4 gigabytes of RAM. You're right. It's it's 1 gigahertz clock speed. It's a dual core processor with 1 gigahertz clock speed with 4 gigabytes of RAM and 64 gigabytes of storage. That's a lot of computers that we own and use regularly right now. It feels like a paint job. They are going to be adding some, what was it that we're supposed to be expecting? We're supposed to be expecting Teams to be integrated in it, and you won't see Skype unless you install it yourself. That won't be included by default, which was with Windows 10. But Teams is supposed to be integrated, and there was one other item that still hasn't shown up, even the preview's available now. If you're a hobbyist and you're running Windows 10 in the Insiders version, there's an official release of Windows 11 that you can download right now and play with. They've got Snap Navigation that's going to be in here, so they've taken, I don't know if you've been using Windows 10 for this, but you can drag a window to one side of your screen or the other, and it'll snap up to the left or to the right, and they'll mosaic themselves together. If you do it into the corners, you can get 4 corners of windows. So they've advanced on that. There's one of the resize buttons, doubles as a snap button, and it shows different windows layouts. So you can take your windows and have them just arrange themselves. And I've been hearing journalists that are reviewing it talking about how they fixed issues when you're using multiple monitors. And very specifically, when you're connecting and disconnecting from multiple monitors, like you do so often when you're using a laptop in a workstation environment, which is precisely what I do here. If you can see me on camera, I'm swapping between 2 different views. And one of those views, you can see that I've got a computer here, a monitor here, a monitor here, and they are all connected to the same computer. When I disconnect it, all my windows move over to one screen. All my icons move over to one screen. Well, then when I reconnect it, it's heads or tails whether those windows are going to go back to the same monitors and if those icons are going to go back to the same locations. And so I've been hearing journalists talk about Windows 11 has corrected this. They really think that Windows 11 has stemmed out of the Windows 10X that was never made available to us. They worked on 10X. They announced it as being the operating system for the computers of dual monitors. That was the system requirement. And then they backed away from that, saying, no, we're gonna release 10X to all computers. So at first it was going to be for mobile platforms like RISC chips, like Qualcomm makes, Apple is making now for their products. 10X was going to be only on that style of RISC architecture, that ARM-based architecture. They backed away from that. They backed away from the dual screens. They said, no, it'll be on single screen devices. And then they just stopped Windows 10X. It was never released. And now they're talking about Windows 11. And I think they took those core ideas and they just added it to Windows 10. So it's going to easily support more than one monitor. I think that's reflected in these Windows layouts that are going to be a standard that you can switch between. And I think their goal is to have this run on the 86 platform, your Intels and your AMD chips, but also be available on the RISC chips, the ARM technology that's out there that currently is more than likely a Qualcomm chip if you're going to use it. There was one other thing that hasn't been released yet that they keep promising in the final release is going to be there. Oh, the taskbar. Right now, if you look at the preview, it only sits on one monitor, but it'll sit on all 3 like Windows 10 does for me in the official release. And if you're previewing this, you need to take it with a grain of salt. There's stuff that's not working. I would look at this Verge article. Did I stick that in our chat? If you're interested in sticking this on an old computer to see how it works, that article lists some of the known limitations of this operating system. And I suspect what's going to happen is Microsoft's basically forking Windows so that Windows 10, if you're a corporation and you're all settled in, you're welcome to continue to use Windows 10 for an extended period of time, especially on those old pieces of equipment. But if your new equipment satisfies their requirements for Windows 11, you're going to be able to upgrade to it for free. I think they've said as much, and be able to upgrade to it. So they'll be running Windows 10 and Windows 11 side by side. I think that all software is going to be available and compatible with both operating systems, because there's different goals with Windows 11 than a Windows upgrade typically has. And I think that if they don't relax the constraints, those computers may never get Windows 11. They may just stay at Windows 10 for a long period of time until you're thinking about buying new computers. I think I've exhausted all the information I have. Linda, do you have anything besides what I'm prattling on about?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. But, you know, if you're going to want to change, then you're going to have an obsolete computer.
Yeah,
Your friend Bob, he'll have to get rid of his computer.
That's right. Well, isn't Bob still using Windows 7?
Yes, but I think it was below Windows 7, the original.
That's right. He was one that was hard to get off of Windows XP.
Yeah, because whoever told him in San Carlos that it wasn't going to be good.
Right. Well, you know, it's computer science. And like science, things change over time. So Windows 7 could have been the worst idea in the world for the first 6 months, and then it's the best operating system that exists. Because it's science. You know, the funniest conspiracy theory I've heard recently that I think is very believable is that all these changes in Windows 11 are due to the fact that these Windows executives have been forced to use their operating system at home. And so they have moved out of their workspaces that are static and never change with their big 27-inch displays and their power-hungry desktops. And they've gone home with their laptops. And they plug in their monitor, and all of a sudden their icons are on the wrong screen. And all of a sudden their layouts don't make as much sense. And they're like, hey, wait a second. Why doesn't this work? I've heard these reviewists say, this feels like a list of why doesn't these things work to be fixed. I don't know. I thought that was funny. I mean, could you imagine people like Sasha Nadella going home to work for 15 months in quarantine? He plugs in his laptop and go, well, I've never seen it look like this before. Pardon me. Well, I think that's it in a nutshell. I think it's really cool. I heard you guys talk a little bit last week. It is absolutely true that Windows, the rumor that Windows 10 was the ultimate operating system, that they would not be making another operating system, was actually something that was shared as a concept by one person in a developers conference. And it was shared in a way that was, this is like the last operating system you'll need. And the reason he was saying it in that manner was because the operating system would be getting updates. We've got a bird flying around our office.
He tried to get on your arm but fell.
But he fell. He fell off my arm. He was sharing it in the context of the operating system would not be replaced manually. It would happen automatically in the background without your knowledge. You no longer have to think about it. This is the last operating system you're going to need. But it turns out, and Microsoft did this, is they allowed that story to run for years as gospel, even though they never verified it. They never officially verified it. And so now there's a bunch of stories running around going, well, they said Windows 10 was going to be the last. And so people have looked into it and said, no, they didn't. One person said it might be. And you guys were talking about that last week. So I was just chiming in on that. I do have one other topic that I just caught the headline of this morning. I have not had a chance to read it, but the headline says it all. I got Microsoft on the brain now. The new Macintosh platform, this M1 chip, is now supporting the Linux kernel. I think this is before they officially support Windows on it. So apparently you can get Ubuntu on this new M1 chip, and we've talked a bit about the Apple M1 chip. It is the most powerful computer on the market right now. And I'm just kind of, by telling you about it and putting it on the stream, I'm hoping Richard's out there watching us, because he was telling me for months, he's been telling me, I'm not interested until we can run Linux on it. Maybe we'll talk then. Well, Linux is on it now. And that was just a one-off. I have run out of topics. What do you guys got? Oh, I guess I got one other topic. I did have the opportunity to set up Amazon PhotoShare on a Macintosh. Amazon has a photos program. We've talked about it a few weeks ago. There's been a number of times I've wanted to demonstrate the app to you online, and something about being online, streaming YouTube, streaming our meeting seems to kill the performance, and I've not been able to bring up the Amazon Photo app in a mode where I wanted to present it to you. However, outside of these meetings, it has worked consistently for me. And what it does is I turn it on every so often. It goes through my photo index and it puts all my photos up in my Amazon Photos account, which I get for free because I'm a Prime member. I'm going to just kind of re-outline what it's offering. You have unlimited space for unlimited quality that's all, folks. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me try that again. Unlimited space for unlimited photo quality. So if you remember with Google Photos, they would downgrade the quality of your photos for unlimited space. They gave it to you for free, but you would go from original quality to high quality. And high quality would be like 1080 by 1920. It was really good quality, but it wasn't what you originally took the picture at. And so prosumers or professionals, they would opt to buy storage from Google because they could store their photos in RAW or their original format. Whereas the rest of us normal people would just, I don't need to pay for that because high quality is good enough for my selfies and my family pic. Well, Google's changed that. So now you only get 15 gigabytes of space. You only get 15 gigabytes of space to synchronize your photos, whether it's high quality or original. But what we learned, because Amazon started re-promoting this service, is that you can use an unlimited amount of space for photos on Google Photos. And all this background is just to say I had a very successful experience setting up the Amazon Photos app on Macintosh, on the Macintosh platform. It ran really well. It ran in the background. It looked identical to the Windows app. It did exactly the same thing the Windows app did. One of the things I like about it is that there is a option called backup, and you go in there and you can tailor your backups. So you can set up a backup for individual folders, or you can set up a backup for a specific hard drive. And you can have different folders running at different times and with different jobs. So if you have paid for the video service, maybe one folder you only want to take the videos out of, the other folder you only want to take the photos out of, another photo you want to take both. You have that kind of flexibility with the Amazon Photos app. Again, the reason this is significant is I think we're all Prime members, and that's all it takes for this unlimited backup of your photos. I think that's exceptional. I can't imagine my future without having Amazon Prime. At this point, it's just a no-brainer. I always have Prime. I can't imagine me not having Prime. What a great place for cloud storage for my photos.
And it said, even if you're not Prime, I just was reading it, even if you are not Prime, you still get your unlimited photos, I think is what I just read.
Oh, I don't think that's right. Unless something's changed recently, I don't think that's right. But boy, that would be a ballsy move on Amazon's part. Everybody gets free storage.
Hold on. It says...
I'd like a link to that if that's the case.
So it says... One second.
I'm going to bring up a screenshot that I took.
Where did I read that? I just read it. I just read it. If you cancel your Prime membership or allow it to expire, you'll still retain the 5 gigabyte combined photo and video storage.
Oh, okay. So what they're...
So it's only 5 gigabytes.
Yeah, there you go. I think they do give 5 gigabytes for free if you're not a Prime member.
Right, 5.
And you get 5 gigabytes...
Okay, once you upload, do they take it off of your computer?
Oh, he's going to poop on your nose.
Yeah, what happens is that they have an app that you point at your photo files, and it just goes through, depending on how much you have, it might take a day or two to get them all up into the cloud space. But you don't have to monitor it. It'll just do it.
No, I'm just concerned about losing them on my computer.
Oh, do they?
Other than that, I just... hard drive and save them myself.
Yeah, and it does. It only copies them up to that space. It's not a synchronizing space. It copies them up to that space. And one of the things, I just helped some friends in Arizona because she uses hard drives like you do, Chester. They're plugged in all the time. They're running and they're getting old. They're getting a bit long in the tooth. One of her hard drives is probably 5 years old. That's about the warranty period of most spinning drives. We in the office typically think that if you bring in a computer with a spinning drive that's 5 years old, we recommend replacing it with an SSD because it's bound to start having problems. It's a moving part and it gets worn out. This is a really easy way to make sure all that stuff stuff on that hard drive, all those photos, it's the stuff that's being backed up as only photo, gets into a secure location in case that hard drive has a problem. It was easy. It was an easy decision for her because those hard drives are used only for photos. So everything in its entirety on that drive could be put up into that cloud, and she could unplug that hard drive or be in a position to just replace it without having to copy everything back over to it. If she wanted to get it, if she wanted to fill that up again, she could do it from the cloud. So the hard drive that she's using, it could just die. She could put a new hard drive in its place and bring all that stuff down cloud. This is the vision of the future that we were talking about 8 years ago that none of us could believe we could live in because we were doing internet in San Carlos. And now here we are, we're doing it.
I see an advantage to those of us that travel back and forth. I usually have to carry one or two external hard drives with me. It sounds like I wouldn't have to bring that at all then. I could just come out of the cloud for it, those photos.
That's right. You could, if you're using external hard drives specifically for photos, you could take that and upload all of that into the cloud, and then you would just go to the cloud when you needed the photos. I'm so disappointed. Every time I want to show something off to you guys with this system, I've got some pictures that I took in case I had problems. And of course, I'm having problems with the picture. Why won't it just open the snapshot? Bring me the snapshot. Oh, yeah, I got one. Show us the shot. But you, that just looks like a black screen right now. If that ever opened, oh, there it is. So setting up your first backup, this is what it looks like when you install the Amazon Photos. It asks you, what do you want to back up? And its default is the pictures folder and the video folder that is designated by your operating system. You can't get past this without selecting at least one of them. And so you just select one of them and you hit done.
Oh my God. Nice landing.
This bird's freaking me out now. Let me open up the next snapshot here. Come on. Here we go. Keep your memory safe. This is, you come across this when you finished setting it up. Really, that done was all you had to do is set up the automatic system. Oh, I got it open twice now. And so they're offering video storage at these prices. If you don't buy it, then you have a 5 gigabyte plan for video. And then after it's all set up, waiting for this snapshot to open up. Oh, this is what it looks like to set up a backup on Windows. The photos plus videos, everything. Upload changes immediately, the destination, the backup destination. This is showing you Amazon Photos in backup under a folder named by my computer. And because all my photos are in the pictures folder, that's what's listed here, users, pictures. Avoid duplicates in case I have the same pictures in there. And I wish I could show you, but these are the only snapshots I took behind these backup settings. There is a list of different backups that I could do that I would create myself. And for this friend of ours, we set up one for the default pictures folder on the Macintosh. And then we set up another one for her image hard drive, the hard drive she uses for her pic. And then away it went. I suspect, knowing her, she's got so many photos that she is still backing up photos 3 days later. Not my remote control. Don't eat my remote control, little remote. Bird.
That's what he was picking.
It's BB the bird and me.
Is the bird coming to Alaska?
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I just was wondering if I needed to be prepared.
The bird's gonna go live with some cats.
Uh oh.
Not at my house.
You need to line it with those potty training pads you have hugs.
Oh yeah. All right, now I've exhausted all topics that I could possibly have.
Did you see the article? It was in iDrop News about the people that had the smart thermostats that the utility is turning them up and down so they could conserve energy remotely.
I'm hoping that the hook here is that they are allowing the utility company to do this. Hey, Cheryl's with us.
Cheryl!
Well, what they're doing is you can opt out of it, but they don't tell you, from what I understand anyway, it's one of these things that's in small print.
That's really interesting. So I would think that I haven't seen that, Fred. If you could provide me with that link, I'd be really interested in reading the details.
Okay, it's today's iDrop News.
Today's iDrop News. I haven't even heard of that.
Okay, it's iDrop.com.
But I would imagine you would have to provide them with your thermostat information if they're going to be able to take control of it.
I don't know. That what it sounded like from the article is they were just doing it.
I found it. iDropNews.com. www.iDropNews.com. I'm going to the homepage right now. Because I can totally see an electric company making a relationship with you in that fashion. Like interviewing you for what days, but Windows 11 won't run on your Intel-based Mac without this clever hack. Where are we?
How come Cheryl got such a nice welcome and I didn't get an honorable mention?
Who said that?
Bill is connected on his phone, and I'd like to introduce
Phoebe. Bill, we're happy you're there too.
Granddaughter Veronica.
Hello. Hi, Veronica.
Hello, Veronica.
We got a future Veronica for a second.
Hey, he didn't say anything about me until I said something.
Veronica, welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club.
Oh, so how about Cheryl's thumb?
San Carlos.
How about Cheryl's thumb?
Put it in front of your face. Yeah, let's get a Cheryl's thumb update.
Your thumb update, dear.
Oh, my thumb update. This one. Yeah, I forgot that was a week ago today.
Yeah. Well, it must it must have healed. It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there.
It's healing pretty well.
I keep the Band-Aids. Keep it clean.
Did Bill superglue it?
So, Scott. Yeah, you've heard about the butcher who backed the meat grinder.
No.
He got a little behind. In...
Okay, I am not finding article, sorry. Fred. If you find it, send me the link. I spelled that. I don't see it on the homepage.
I didn't find it either.
I'm trying to do a search for it, but I'm afraid my mind can only multitask so many things.
Okay, it's news/FastTech is where it's located.
FastTech? So it's not iDrop News?
FAST. Yeah, it's iDrop News.
iDrop News/FastTech. I'll try that. But what I was going to say is I would imagine utility companies would be pushing these ideas. I would hope FastTech with its FASTTECH.
Yeah.
Oh, I get
it. It looks like there's a space between the fast and fast.
Oh, maybe there's an underscore. Yeah. I'll try. They've got a very pretty 404 page. Look at that. Well, that was the numeric code that was assigned by the web browser to indicate there is no page. And the idea is that you would grab that error, that numeric error, and you'd go, Fred, I'm doing something wrong. It's not. Just drop the link in the chat if you can.
Okay.
It is not coming up. And I am open for other topics now that we have gotten the update on Cheryl's. Did you say Bill did glue it together for you? I thought Canada.
Yes, we have what's.
I was going to say, I thought Canada had better health care than that.
Yeah, well, we have a spray on Band-Aid that's called New Skin. So we kind of sprayed that on, but it's basically glue. It's a kind of a clear finish glue. So
I'm trying to use. Yeah.
He didn't get out the actual super glue.
Not the actual super glue. BB says don't try and use a glue gun.
Period.
Unless you want to bedazzle your finger.
But make a nice accessory thumb.
Whenever you made a point,
well,
it would be brilliant.
Leaving you guys a message saying that we're going to go finish setting up camp. My grandmother Veronica and I watched Home Alone last night. She'd never seen it, and I think I'd only ever seen parts of it. So it was a fun little thing. And I watched Cruella with this one as well. So I'm two for Cruella already, and I loved it again.
Well, Cheryl's saying how much she enjoyed Cruella like we did. And that was the first time she'd watched Home Alone, which is a classic John Hughes film. Everyone should know. And
Scott,
Judy, I keep hearing you cutting in. What do you got?
So it says on iDrop News, it says customers may be furious that their electric company can control their comfort, but they likely signed up for this type of intrusion to join by joining an incentive program that rewards customers for using a smart thermostat.
Okay, that sounds...
Hidden in the fine print of these programs are terms that allow the electric company to adjust thermostats during peak energy demand days.
I would imagine what that included was they helped you buy the thermostat.
Or they gave you the thermostat.
Yeah. That makes complete sense. It makes good sense, too.
It doesn't. It's another way that they can control you.
Well, yeah, but wouldn't it be nice to have, like I would like to keep my electric bill down to a certain amount each day, and some algorithms figuring out, they're balancing how much you're paying with what kind of comfort levels are available to you.
I have a notification that comes on that says you have used 50% of your tier one water allowance.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, well, it happens usually on the 16th of the month. So I have, sometimes I can get by without going over to tier two, but you know.
Well, I wish we'd get, I just switched microphones, so I hope you guys can still hear me. Mm-hmm. Bibiana has gone on to her own thing. It's 11 o'clock. She's like, I'm out. You guys always run over. I would like something like that for our CFE bill.
Right.
Especially in the summer here. That would be awesome. I'd like to know how quickly we're approaching the next tier.
And then you get up to you. It's not up to someone else to automatically adjust your thermostat. That, to me, is not a good thing.
Well, okay. But I could imagine that what you've done, you've agreed for this.
I have.
And if you, I would imagine they have a web interface that you have access to. And you can modify that arrangement, because I'm sure they're more than happy to sell you more electricity.
When you think? I don't know.
They might not want to overload their system.
They may not have it.
So therefore, they don't care how hot your house gets.
Well, they care how hot their system gets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the same
you
company.
You also care how hot their system is.
Yeah, that's the same company that had the power outages last winter when they got that cold spell.
Because of the ice or something, yes.
Well, that would be infuriating. In fact, I bet they'd have trouble selling that concept after the whole blackouts during cold season, or nowadays, right now, blackouts during hot seasons.
Speaking of the weather briefly, it is only about 65 degrees here in Colorado. And normally, almost July, it would be in the 80s. So we're having unseasonably cool and wet weather as opposed to the West Coast.
Yeah, the key for Colorado is those afternoon rains.
Uh-huh.
There was a meteorologist on the CBC the other day, and she was explaining how the difference in temperature between the equator and the pole is what drives is the engine for the jet stream. And because the difference is not so much because of the warming situation, the jet stream is getting wobbly. It doesn't, like it used to go in one direction, but now it's kind of like clouds that are kind of getting a swirl into them. And so I think that might be what's causing this.
Wow.
Well, that's interesting.
It's science, so everybody's got a theory.
Yeah, I think it was 117 in Portland yesterday or something that, or 114.
Records for them.
Yeah. Whidbey Island, it was, I think, 90 the other day up on Whidbey.
Wow. That's
well, we're supposed to go up to 91 today. I was just checking my smartwatch. It says that we're going to have a high of 91 in San Carlos.
That's nice.
Yeah, until you start looking at the humidity. Somebody had made comment earlier in the meeting about humidity really dictating how you feel. And I had that experience. We were in Phoenix for a week. Just about every day was over 100 degrees. We did have an overcast day. It went down into the 80s. But just about every day was over 100 degrees. Some days it was up to 115 degrees. It was crazy. But that's when they talk about the dry heat. I was still able to load equipment into the car, walk around outside. I get back to San Carlos to unpack the car in 90 degree weather, and I'm just sopping wet like a sponge.
I lived in New Orleans for 4 years. You're surrounded by water, and the temperature gets up to almost 100 with 100% humidity, that is not fun.
No.
Yeah, look up an article that talks about humidity is not the real issue. The real issue is the dew point. There's a very interesting article that explained why dew point really influences how hot you feel versus humidity.
Well, that's interesting. I'm putting that into a Google search right now.
Yeah, I read it and I was going, what? I'd never heard this before. And it was very interesting in explanation.
Oh, here from Wikipedia. It says, dew point is the temperature to which air must be cooled to become saturated with water vapor. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, just
the article comparing why you should use dew point and not humidity.
Yeah, pass it on. All right. Jim, go ahead.
So, they just sort of a, I don't know, what is it, old men's tale or something like that. If the sweat is dripping off of you, then this is a problem because your body is going through all that work to get the sweat out of you. And then the idea is it's going to evaporate and cool you. But if it drips off, you've actually worked to make the drip that you don't get the benefit of the evaporation, you know. So if you start to drip sweat, you better get organized about cooling yourself.
Well, you just described every overheating incident I've had. I was, when I'm unloading the car in San Carlos, you can follow my sweat trail back and forth from in and out of the house.
Yeah. If you're dripping sweat, do something different.
Is that the dew point when the sweat runs?
Could have something to do with it.
That's my dew point.
Yeah. That's do something quick. Get in the shower.
It'd be the do not point.
Yeah, right. That's when you know to get back in the air conditioner.
That's right.
Hey Maggie, I got your text message. Do we still not hear you, or are you able to talk to us?
I think you can hear me now. It wasn't working on my computer for some reason.
Okay. I had a really weird issue this morning. I couldn't get any microphones to work on my computer. And I know I've gone through some Windows updates recently, but it's not clear why, but absolutely, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 microphones available to me, and none of them were accepting input. All of them looked like they worked, and all of them looked like they were set up and I should just be able to flip over to them, and none of them would work. And through a series of rebooting, and Microsoft has these microphone troubleshooters that are back down in the settings. You might check that out, Maggie. There's a microphone troubleshooter that you can run through on your computer. And at one point, it actually said something for a particular microphone. I picked the microphone on my external webcam, which is sitting over here. And I said, okay, I want to use that. I want to test it with a troubleshooter. It said that there was some service that hadn't been running. And so it clicked that service on, and I think that might be what me. It was a service that all the microphones must have had to use, because after that, all the microphones started working again.
Okay, I have a question.
Certainly.
Did I miss this last week, or have you guys discussed Microsoft Authenticator?
Well, we haven't discussed it in excess. I think we've mentioned it in passing as a potential replacement for LastPass.
Right. Well, I got that email you sent about discussing it, but we never did. Or was that just a test email?
I don't remember sending it out in email. But everything's just a test. If it doesn't seem to be working right, that wasn't the final version.
Okay. Okay.
Let's make that our default position. If I do something and it doesn't feel right, it was probably just a test. Okay. I don't want to go on the record as that being the final version.
Okay, how about a computer question or two? First,
do it, Dave. Go ahead.
Do you believe that a wired Ethernet connection is always going to be faster than a Wi-Fi connection?
Historically, that's the case. We've recently had some strange jumps in wireless technology. If you had a wired network from 7 years ago, potentially you could buy a Wi-Fi device, like a Wi-Fi router, and own a mobile device that could connect faster than that cable could. But that's assuming your Ethernet's sitting at 100 megabits a second instead of going up to 1 gig.
Well, assuming it's a gig and you have a mesh network, does it make sense sense to put the second mesh device attached via Ethernet rather than Wi-Fi?
Maybe the better way to answer this question is that from the way I understand mesh networks, every time you add a node, you increase the potential for having more connection, if that makes sense.
Well,
so you're probably comparing that 1 gigabit connection against how many nodes you could travel data across between you and the router.
Well, the second device, you know, the node on the mesh network, you know, it has to communicate with the, I think, the first node only. And therefore, if you're trying to use an Ethernet, does the cable have to go from that first node or from the original router where you connect that first node?
Yeah, just for language sake, let's call that first node the router node. Base station router node. And then the rest are repeaters. They're the mesh nodes.
Correct.
And so the way I understand mesh technology, the way I've used it and the way I've come to understand it, is that if I had one node between me and the router, I'm at the limitations of the speed of that node, which suffers from radio interference and distance, you know, signal degradation over distance. However, if I were to put another node between me and that router, then I have twice the opportunity. And if I were to put another node, I would have three times the opportunity. And if it was a signal degradation problem, I could space them out a little bit, make a bit of a matrix. So given Wi-Fi interference in the area, my packet may go faster through one node versus another at any given time, opening up lots of opportunities for more speed. Whereas the Ethernet cable is limited to that max speed.
Right, but if it's a 1 gig, which typically the Wi-Fi isn't going to do, it seems like the Ethernet cable would always be better.
Well, it would, except I think we're starting to get up towards 1 gig Wi-Fi. What does Wi-Fi 6 have as far as speed constraint now? It seems like that is getting up there. Let me do a quick, how fast is Wi-Fi 6? How fast is Wi-Fi 6? Because we're well above 100 megabits at this point. Wi-Fi 6 maxes out at 9.6 gigabytes. Wow, that's a lot faster than I was expecting. It's over 250% faster than Wi-Fi 5. So they're either going to have to do 10 gigabit Ethernet, which is doable, or fiber optic, which in the end, mm-hmm. when we all switch to fiber optic, when all our cables are fiber optic, we'll probably not have to replace cables. We'll just be replacing devices at either end. But the cables will probably be just foundation at that point. I did learn from the fiber optic installers, though, that fiber optic has a shelf life. It gets brittle with age. So you don't want it to sit rolled up in a coil on a shelf for 10 years. You want it to sit in a trench. Settled into a trench I think a trench is the way to go. You hang it on poles, wind could be a problem in the future.
Well, just the heat,
yep. They said it suffers from heat, exposure, and age.
It's not a permanent solution then.
Well, it's very close to permanent, but what you don't want to do is you don't want to be sitting in a warehouse in a coil for 10 years. You want to have, if it's going to sit for 10 years, it should sit installed. It should be in the walls. It should be in a trench. It should be in an installation where it's not going to be disturbed, because as it ages, it becomes brittle and it becomes much easier to break and harder to work with.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Jester, you say you can relate to that description.
I can relate to that.
Well, I didn't want anybody to infer anything from that, but that is funny.
So, but Jester, you're looking pretty mobile right now. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I've lost 35 pounds, and I'm finally getting a little bit of appetite back, but I'm doing good.
You're looking like a teenager.
And I'll put a light on the subject this time.
Yeah, you're looking good.
Right.
You're not in the shadows. I'm surprised by this Wi-Fi. I had not done that Google search before. There is an article I'm looking at right now called Wi-Fi 6 versus Wi-Fi 5. And if you're not familiar with this, we've changed naming conventions. So while we've been a club, we've referred to Wi-Fi as 802.11a, 802.11b, 802.11c, 802.11ab, 802.11g, and the latest is 802.11ac and 802.11ax. And 802.11ac came out in 2014. Finally, this page is up on my screen. So the major change to Wi-Fi 6 happened in 2019. But I know from experience, if you go out on the market buying devices, you still have to look for Wi-Fi 6 based devices. They're still an option. They're not the standard. And on this article comparing Wi-Fi 6 to Wi-Fi 5, it lays out what we're referring to. We never called it Wi-Fi 1 or Wi-Fi 2 or Wi-Fi 3 or Wi-Fi 4. Even at Wi-Fi 5, we were still calling it 802.11ac, and we're only now beginning to adopt that nomenclature that it would be Wi-Fi 5.
Any idea about the premium you have to pay to get from 5 to 6?
New equipment. That's the premium.
Yeah. Well, any idea about the price difference?
Well, there wouldn't be any price difference. You'd just be buying the latest device. Like when you go to upgrade your Macintosh, mm-hmm. it's going to come with Wi-Fi 6 because that's what they're building it with now.
Right.
So it's going to be priced competitively in the market the way anything else is. And that's why Wi-Fi 6 hasn't really been a decision-making factor when buying equipment. When you need to replace your computer, the latest one you buy will come with Wi-Fi 6, so then you'll be in Wi-Fi 6. Nobody's going out and buying equipment because it has Wi-Fi 6. They're just ending up with it. We're pretty much to that kind of, I mean, as an analogy, we're pretty much to that point when it comes to flat screen TV, that if you're shopping between $300 to $600 for a 30-inch or bigger TV, you just get a 4K display. You're not even shopping for a 4K display. That's just what you get.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to save some money, you might get down below $300 and find you can get a big high definition, a big 1080 by 1920 display still out there. But really, the market is saturated with 4K displays that fit between the $300 and $600 price point. If you get above that price point, then you may be shopping for a 5K to 8K display, and you're making those decisions. But again, that mid-tier price point, you're just getting a 4K display, whether you intended to or not. And that's the way Wi-Fi 6 is you replace your device, you're just going to end up with Wi-Fi 6, or there's some cost savings that you know you're taking advantage of, and that's the reason you're not getting it. It's an older product or an older design. Chester, I just wanted to finish off with it. It's exactly the same for your router decision. And most of us use the internet at around 100 megabits a second, maybe a little higher, a little slower, but none of us are using the internet at gigabytes of speed right now. So these routers that come out on the market, they're gonna support Wi-Fi 6, and they're gonna connect you up exactly the way you've been connected before, because all the equipment that you're using, even your service that's being provided to you, won't go up into the gigabytes. You won't be taking advantage of it. So you won't go out and buy a router simply because it has Wi-Fi 6. You'll buy a router with Wi-Fi 6 because that's what has saturated the market, if that makes sense. Chester, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to comment that the principle I've followed for several years is that if it's convenient to use Ethernet, then go for Ethernet. Otherwise, you need to be sure that you have enough bandwidth that the Wi-Fi will be adequate.
I think that's still sound advice. However, you always have to factor in the cost of Ethernet installation.
Right. That's the point. It has to be convenient.
Yeah, it has to be convenient. If you already have an Ethernet cable running across across the house, then that's a very solid way to connect two rooms, and it's the preferred way to do it right now. But if you don't already have the installation, then these mesh networks and the ability to add nodes may be the convenient solution for you.
That's where I'm lucky. We have star wiring in this house, which means every single room has three low voltage connections, one of which is an Ethernet connection into the main terminal, in our case, the DIN, a telephone cable, and a coax cable.
Dave, you want to hear something strange I discovered about Google Wi-Fi, their mesh network?
Sure.
They do not recommend using a cable backbone for them, like say there's wireless interference. However, it will work if you daisy chain them together. So completely not a star network, but similar to the way we used to install telephones in a house.
Sure, yeah.
From one to the next one. They also have a bridge setting that I discovered doesn't work. It says it works. Google Wi-Fi right now, if you're paying attention to mesh networks, Google Wi-Fi, what I discovered, is that they're in a transitional period. They have just stopped using their Google Wi-Fi app for configuring their hardware, and they've moved it into the Google Home app. The Google Home app is the app that you use for all your Internet of Things devices. If you have a Ring doorbell, if you have security cameras, if you have smart lighting, Google wants you to keep all of that under your Google Home app. And now they have moved the Google Wi-Fi mesh network into that app. Everything about their documentation makes it sound like you can stick your Google, this is what I was trying to do, stick your Google Wi-Fi mesh node into a bridge mode, which means it's just Wi-Fi. And you put it at the end of an Ethernet connection that's connected to another network. I mean, for example, you've got Ethernet running to all the rooms of your office, but one of those rooms you want to have Wi-Fi, then you could plug that cable into one of your Google Wi-Fi nodes and provide Wi-Fi there. For that to work and be administered correctly, it needs to be in bridge mode. So the network that's being created is just a transparent part of the cabled network. The DHCP services, the IP range, all that's coming from the network, not the Wi-Fi node. And that's why it has to go into bridge mode. However, what I learned with the Google Home app is that I can only put one in bridge mode. I couldn't put four of them into bridge mode, and the software fell apart, and it gave me crazy answers. And I finally just had to say, it's not ready yet. And I set everything back to factory settings and set it back up again as a mesh network. And that's the end of my bridge network story of bad Google software.
Well, bad software seems quite common these days. I tried upgrading my ExpressVPN to using their new lightweight software, and they officially don't even have it really released yet, and it's lacking functionality, and the 5 gig part of it seems to just keep dropping randomly. So it's obviously not ready for prime time.
So, and you're referring to the implementation that would be flashed in your router, is that correct?
Correct. You actually go back to standard, in my case, Netgear R7000 router, and they add on top of it, and then you no longer have access to most of the controls that you used to have with the router.
So they have already implemented that new standard in the software VPNs. So if you're using ExpressVPN on your Windows computer or your Macintosh computer, or you're running ExpressVPN, you can run it on your Fire Stick too, your Fire Stick 4K. They've got an Android implementation that you can run. Those are implemented really well with the new standard. In my experience, I haven't had any problems with it.
Yeah, the router ones are the problem, not the PC one.
So that's what and I haven't had any experience trying to install their latest software, so that's a good update, Dave.
I went back to my old DDWRT install.
Hey, refresh my memory again. What do they call that new standard? It's light something?
Lightway.
Lightway, not wave, but way.
I think way, maybe it's wave. Anyway, it's designed to improve communications when you lose the communications and restart it very quickly without going through all the hassle.
Yeah, that's what I understand as well, is that it was a more breakable and repairable VPN. It didn't have to go through all the protocols that the traditional software or traditional protocol needed to. It didn't have to go through all the handshaking to get reconnected. We still use VPN standards that were around before we had wireless connections. And this Lightway, if that's correct, was designed specifically in a world that has connections that are disconnecting and reconnecting all the time to make it more stable for the people that are using it. Quicker recovery.
Like a good idea, I need to finish it for some things.
Yeah. Hey, we're time is rolling on, and we're starting to. I need to start winding down this meeting, but we've started a tradition of recommendations towards the end of the meeting, and I feel like we've reached that point now. Recommendations, I'll remind you, are us just pointing each other in the ways of things that we find interesting as far as good content. They can be TV shows, movies, applications you're using that you think that we can find useful, books, podcasts, websites you're visiting that you think is useful and would like to share. Does anybody have anything out there that the group should know about? The floor is yours.
I'm using a program called Locast, L-O-C-A-S-T. And what it does is it sits there and allows me to pick up all the TV stations out of Seattle, because I'm 125 miles from Seattle and I refuse to get cable. And they ask for a donation and I donate $5 a month and I don't get all of the begging things where it says
it's nagware. That's what you're saying, is if you run it for free, it just keeps nagging you to donate.
That's it, nagware. I hadn't heard that before, but yes.
Yes, I've been using Locast for ages. In my case, that's one of the prime reasons for our VPN on the router, so that basically I receive all my local Denver TV stations. And for people who have not looked at it, you typically think your local stations are what, 10, maybe something like that. In our case, it's more like 50, because things like CBS broadcast four different simultaneous things all the time. So it's really
You're talking about the HD stuff where they were a network provider might have six channels under their one channel.
Yes,
I know really Phoenix has got an insane inventory of local high HD TV channels because of that.
And I think Phoenix just was made available as a location through Locast.
Oh, wow. So for this to work for us outside of these locations, if you're looking at my screen, you're probably seeing that I've got the Locast website up, and they've created a map of the continental United States, and they've put antennas in the places that they have service.
Their map's not totally correct. They keep announcing every week new locations like Columbus and things like that.
Okay. I see they have Puerto Rico, but they don't have Alaska or Hawaii, so I feel slighted.
Seattle.
But they've got Puerto Rico.
You must be in that area, at least that they think you're in that area, for you to use that location. You can't go around and select, I want to see a football game here. And the other interesting part of it is when you get your bill, your $5 bill, it's like Sports Network International is who's the billing.
Ah, it's FIFA. I forgot. We're a bunch of Americans. It's a soccer league. Yeah. This is why you use ExpressVPN, is so that you can run a VPN into Seattle or into Phoenix and then run Locast on top of it so that it believes you're in that local area so you can take advantage of those free channels.
Locast, but it does not work correctly if you're using CBS All Access or what's now called Paramount, because it doesn't always place you in the right city.
All right. Wait, Dave, are you saying that Paramount you're able to use for free if you're in the local area? I don't think so.
Not for free.
Okay. Because you can use CBS All Access anywhere in the United States if you're paying for it. You just have to be in the United States.
But when I'm trying to watch my Denver Bronco football game and it thinks I'm in Wichita, it doesn't work.
Right. Right. Okay. So, local sports. You're absolutely right. They geofence local sports.
But this is just ExpressVPN. All the rest of the stuff does work. and it's not geofence. You know, and they're some.
Yeah, the ExpressVPN, you can't make it appear as though you're right there in Denver.
It does for everything except CBS All Access,
which you would be using to watch a local game on.
Yeah, and it works about 25% of the time. So it's not, some days it'll work, some days it won't. You might reconnect right away and it might work.
That sounds pretty mushy.
So they've got a timing problem in their connection through a VPN.
I've been very happy helping people with ExpressVPN. I don't actually buy the service, but I have a number of customers that use it. And we're able to set it up on a Fire TV stick so that people can take advantage of their Amazon Prime while they're down here without having to pay for Mexican Prime. Of course, my recommendation is always, if you spend more than half the year down here, you should probably get Mexican Prime. It's a good deal. Mom, we got to do something about your computer. You just keep coming and going and coming and going.
Yeah, what we do is run it through the internet, through the router. So then from the TV standpoint, I just select, okay, I want wireless. Do I want to connect locally or do I want to connect to, in our case, the U.S. and Denver?
Sure, sure. That's a great way to do it. All your devices can choose. In fact, the what's also a popular way to connect things is to have one router dedicated to a VPN and the other dedicated to a Mexican connection. And you just pick one Wi-Fi over the other, depending on your circumstances.
Right. The only gotcha with that, by the way, is that the Netgear routers probably have three times the signal strength of the local Telmex router. So you might want to put another router behind the Telmex router just for strength or mesh.
Right. Yeah, that's a good recommendation because so many of the newer technology now is getting as far as like 1,700 feet radius. And the Telmex equipment definitely is not getting that kind of distance. So I, on our recommendations list, I've put Locast as an app people ought to check out if they're looking for a way to look at the free over-the-air high-definition TV channels from a local area online.
Locast.org. It's run as a nonprofit because nonprofits can legally rebroadcast where a profit-making company cannot.
I remember we used to have a service like this that got in trouble on that semantic.
Exactly true. That's why it's a nonprofit.
So I've also added Home Alone to our movies list because it's an awesome movie and Cheryl brought it up. And I am just saying again that Why Women Kill, I've been watching it with my daughter and it's just the funniest stuff. That is a great show. It's got Lucy Liu in it. Love her. Is there any other suggestions for shows, movies, apps, websites? Nothing. Paul, you don't have anything to contribute this week? I see people are dropping out of the meeting. I hope that's not from my end.
No, we traveled to come home last week, so I didn't do much prospecting. But I'm using my we bought a Fire Stick for here and left the other one in Mexico. And this Fire Stick is new and improved over the other one because it's got buttons on it for Netflix and some other Hulu or something like that.
The Fire Stick has a Netflix button on it?
Yeah. Dedicated buttons on it.
Oh, wow. I was happy with just volume controls and being able to sort out my TV set without me having to do anything.
Yeah, I've got it set up so that I can turn off my TV or adjust the volume and stuff like that.
You know what else is cool about that Fire Stick is you can run a remote access program such as AnyDesk so that like if you're having trouble setting things up on your stick, somebody like me can remote into it and see the same screen you're looking at.
That's neat.
Yeah, it's pretty flexible. I love the Fire Stick 4Ks. I haven't seen them with the dedicated buttons like Paul's describing, but the fact that it figures out your TV set so you can do the volume and the power all on the same remote, to me, was the killer app of the Fire Stick.
Yeah.
Should we bring one with us when we go down there, or do they sell them down there?
Well, you can buy them. I'm not sure what they sell for in the Canadian marketplace. In the U.S. marketplace, I just bought one for this job I was doing. It cost $39, and it actually cost $29 2 weeks before during Prime Day.
Yeah, that ours was bought during Prime Day. And the other one that I had left in Mexico, I paid $30 at Amazon for it.
Just
in the United States.
In the United States, yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, it's a good question. I wonder what it's going for in the Mexican market right now, because you can buy it off of Amazon in Mexico, but they definitely have different pricing.
It'd be more expensive there, probably.
Yeah. I'm trying to look it up right now. I'm always asking my computer to do a little bit more than it probably should be while I'm recording this. I'm just waiting for an answer. Come on. Come on. You can do it.
Have to get pedal assist on that one.
That's right. That's exactly what it feels like. I should do it over on this computer over here, because it's not doing any jobs right now. Oh, here we go. I'm on Amazon Mexico right now. I'll share with you guys. And we will look for the one I recommend is the Fire Stick 4K. I haven't seen them put out a product yet that has that kind of performance. Waiting.
Hello? Oh, okay.
Hello, you're back.
Well, maybe. I'm trying to do both my iPad and this, but I can't talk to you on my iPad. Every time I want to say something, I get aw snap. So maybe it's me.
Aw snap on the iPad or on the computer?
On the computer.
Okay. It's your computer. Wait. You heard. We've got tickets. We're coming up.
I've heard that. I guess I'm going to have to start cleaning house. Oh, dear.
Yeah, we're going to need a place to crash. We were planning on being there for a month.
You're going to have plenty of choices, I think.
That's what it sounded like when talking with Justin. So I'm looking at, Paul, you can see they're offering it up with those dedicated buttons on the bottom of it. This in the Mexican market is 1,600 pesos. That's about $80.
Oh, so better to bring one.
Yeah, if you can. Hang on one more moment, and we are winding this meeting down because I am going to have to go, but it will look that's in about, the Mexican market.
That's about 500 Canadian.
4K. Yeah. That's $5 million Canadian.
This week.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, so funny. It's the Fire Stick.
I don't even see it easily available. It almost looks like they don't have any ready to be sent out in the American market.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how things are down here and they're charging huge amounts of money.
Just a stick of wood around here costs money, a lot of money. Two by four is three times as much as it was a year ago.
Okay, Scott, this is what your dad just got. Let's take it out of the packaging.
We didn't just get it.
Oh, we didn't just get it. Okay.
So I want to see if it's still the most current.
Oh, gosh. Hang on. So Scotch tape is really hard to get off. Okay, here we go.
4K. Bring it up a bit so we can see the front of it. Okay, so this is the one that I think of as the traditional 4K. It's an awesome piece of equipment, and we just bought one at Best Buy for $39 plus tax. So, Jim, if you were rolling through the United States, that would probably be the way to get it, is to roll through a Best Buy, because online at Amazon right now, they don't appear to be available. Hmm. And then I'm not sure what the one with the extended buttons is that Paul has got and is obviously available in the Mexican market. Paul, what did you pay for yours?
I don't know, because my sister-in-law ordered it. We were in transit.
Yeah, I can't even find a price for that equipment in the US.
If I see one for
market.
$40, I should grab it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd buy it for $40. That's Pop, that looks like what I think of as the most recent one, except for this one that has just come out that Paul's got. I've got it on my screen in the Mexican market. I didn't find it in the US market. Let me bring up a bigger picture of it. And you can see it has these extended buttons on it for Prime and Netflix. I can't see what else is there. Crackle? I don't know what it is. So I think that's the only difference. It doesn't even have a different name. There we go. Now we can see it. Disney Plus, Amazon Music, Prime Video, and Netflix have dedicated buttons. And then they've made the Alexa button blue, and they've put a blue LED in the upper corner. So I do believe this would be considered the most recent version. But I bet the 4K, the device itself, I bet it's the exact same device. And what has changed is this is the latest remote control.
Yeah.
Nice, wouldn't it?
That's good.
That remote control would make so much sense in my life because we use every one of those services. That's right. Almost daily. Almost daily we use Prime Video, we use Netflix, we use Disney Plus, and we use Amazon Music practically daily. So that's a really well thought out remote. But I imagine we can buy the remotes separately. For years we've been able to buy remotes separate of the device. And so if we wanted those dedicated buttons, I bet this is going to be, if it's not already, I bet it's on the market. It will be on the market separately as a replacement remote.
Oh, yeah.
I did recently have an interesting experience with the Fire Sticks in my life. They both, the one I have at the house and the one that I bought for this company in Phoenix, went through a remote control software update. On the screen, it said, "We are updating the software on your remote control. Don't press any buttons. Don't turn this off."
Yeah, when I was installing mine, it did that too, twice. It uploaded. But the other thing is, speaking of remotes, my remote is not working for a mini split.
Send a message to him about it.
So I looked on the internet for the remotes for the mini split, and it's from free market, I guess, Mercado Libre.
Okay.
And so is that a reliable way to buy?
Oh, they're awesome. We buy from Mercado Libre all the time. Uh-huh. In fact, I think that they've gone overboard with being reliable. I think they consider themselves in competition with Amazon in Mexico, and they've done a superior job in many ways.
Oh, okay. So I wouldn't have trouble having it delivered to our office in Loma del Mar or to my door?
Never had a problem. Of course, the truth is I do all my purchasing through my office because I think of it as being centrally located.
Yeah.
It's staffed, so there's pretty much someone there all the time. Yeah. But we've never had a problem receiving from, and actually Mercados Libre with us has a reputation of products showing up sooner than they say they will.
How do they deliver when there's so few street addresses in Mexico?
Yeah, I've never tried to have them deliver out in the ranchitos, but I think the answer to that question is no matter how cryptic it is, there is a finite number. And so eventually all the Google Maps have gotten all our streets.
Yeah, I was going to say GPS will take you there even though there's no street address.
That's right. So a delivery person probably only has a problem one or two times before it's right there in their database.
Yeah. Okay, well, when I go back, I'll give it a try. It was only like $16 for the remote. So,
is this the smart remote that Linda turned us on to a while back?
No, this is a remote for my mini split.
Right. There's a smart remote made by a company I think called Qubi, and you're able to set it up in a central area where it can see your, because it's infrared, it can see your mini split, and you can access it with a smart, like an Internet of Things application on your phone. So you can schedule it to come on and off at different times. You could go to the app while you're driving to your house and tell it to turn the air conditioner on it's cool when you show up. Qubi Smart. And it seems like Qubi is a Mexican product. It is intended for the Mirage air conditioners. I don't know what your mini split is, but
it is a Mirage. Yeah,
I'm gonna put this in the chat because this is the next upgrade I want to do to our climate control situation.
Yeah, okay.
This is the website for Qubi, and you can find Qubi products, smart products, being sold on Amazon in Mexico. I think also even in the U.S. they're selling Qubi products.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, maybe
I'll get it. And Mercados Libre too. So it's okay. It's on Amazon in Mexico, in the US, and on Mercados Libre. Oh, hey, I'm wrong. They've got the Qubi app, but they don't have the product on Amazon in the States. I'm looking again here at search results.
It's Santa Rosa. Can I get it there?
Yeah. Oh, here it is. Oh, look at that. It's imported from Mexico.
That's a Qubi Smart.
Yeah.
So let me find a price for it. You need the app to control it.
That's correct.
There's no features to control.
Yeah, the app becomes your remote control. So it's not an ideal replacement for a lost remote control. It is adding smart controls two-year mini split. That's the what it solves is smart controls right. for your mini split.
But with I don't need the remote anymore, though, right?
Well, yeah, but then again, don't we all need a remote? I mean, in the end, you got to be able to hand a remote to a spouse or to a kid.
Or keep it away from them.
Yeah. So here on my screen, this is it's $15.95. Oh no, what happened? Ugh, I clicked on something. Hold on.
Yeah, that'll happen.
It's 1,595 pesos. This is what I hope to add to my house, my living room at some point. And it would be sitting. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
It's $15 or $16.
No, it's more like $60.
Oh, $60, $70.
Yeah, that's the reason I haven't gotten it yet.
But oh, yeah, five times 15.
Yeah. But you can see the device. You can see it there sitting in the palm of somebody's hand. It's been built so it can be mounted like on a wall. It just needs to be facing. That's the back of it with mounting holes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just needs to be facing the mini split in question. And so it takes over the duties of your remote control. And you can use a smart app to program it to turn it on and off at different times or different temperature levels.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's a pretty awesome way to add smart to a dumb device.
Yeah. Okay. I'll investigate that. Sounds good. See, I don't know what would happen to my remote, but because when we were there a month ago, it was from my first house in Loma Del Mar, and it spent the summer with batteries in it, but the batteries didn't leak. But when I put new batteries in it, it doesn't function. It doesn't come on. I press the reset. I press the sleep. You know, they have.
It's got one of those LCD displays, and it's not bringing up information on it.
It's just dead.
Yeah. you know, we suffer from corrosion and oxidization. You might try a little vinegar and baking soda and try cleaning where the batteries contact.
I spun the batteries. That helps a lot of times.
Yeah. Many times you can get a connection. But if there was
no dust in it or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, corrosion dust.
You know, the other thing that happens is we have such extreme temperature changes that things crack.
Yeah.
And maybe something inside just expanded or contracted and broke a connection.
Maybe it desoldered.
Yeah, something like that. I had, Paul, this is actually a possibility. We had a wall clock that we love the wall clock. It's just some garbage wall clock from like Home Depot, but it is beautiful. It's cast in plastic, but it's cast in a way it looks like ironwork. So it's lightweight plastic, but on the wall, it looks like a big iron clock. And it's got one of those cheesy Chinese movements that you can buy like a dozen of them for $5 on eBay.
Yeah.
And I was going through all this research trying to figure out the cheapest, easiest way to get a new dumb movement to put in this clock because it stopped working. And we love the look of it. And I was going to pay, I don't know, like $5 for six of these movements. So I'd get one. I finally just pulled it apart because I could. And inside the plastic movement, like I had the same experience. That's what I'm getting at is when I looked at the batteries, I expected to find a corroded battery and a bad contact, but it was clean. It looked like I should just put a new battery in it and it should work, but it didn't work. It also was just working before we moved it. We moved it to paint and then it stopped working. I put in a new battery. It doesn't matter. I pull the movement apart and I discover that the way they built the battery connection was ripe for oxidization and corrosion. And so even though on the outside it looked perfectly clean and the battery wasn't corroded, on the inside was where it was making a horrible connection because of corrosion that had built up on the board.
Oh, yeah.
You might actually, that might be worth taking out a screw and pulling apart and just seeing if there's corrosion on the inside of the device.
Yeah, okay.
Or paying $16 for a new one. I don't know how you value your time.
I'm retired. My time is worthless.
All right. Well, guys, I got to say goodbye. I sure appreciate you being here each week, and we'll continue to have these meetings every Tuesday at 10. I send out announcements beforehand. Let me know if you're not getting the announcement. Pass the announcement off to anybody you think would like to join our group. Go to YouTube and click subscribe. We're still trying to get at least 100. And until then, tech on.
Adios.
Adios, amigos. Hey, why don't you two stay online for a moment? Let me shut this down.
Okay.
But don't go anywhere.
Where are we over here? I need one more second. And we're going to do that. And we're going to do that. And that. And we're off the air.